Going to be reading Daniel chapter 4, beginning at verse 1. And I'm not going to read the whole section that we're going to be covering today, but we'll be reading it and working through it because it's a long section, and I don't think it's the best way to approach it would be to read it through and then go back to it. So, at Daniel chapter 4, and we'll be beginning at verse 1. Up to this chapter, we have seen that the events talked about took place close together at the beginning of Daniel's captivity, which was also at the beginning of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. If you'd like a title for this sermon, it's A Mad King. But these chapters that we've dealt with so far have been up to the beginning, took place in the beginning of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar's reign. Chapter 4 is difficult to date, and many assume that it took place toward the end of Nebuchadnezzar's 43-year reign. I'm going to disagree with that. And after chapter 4, after these events in Nebuchadnezzar's life, nothing more is said about him in the book of Daniel. And while the Lord was revealing himself to the whole world in the story of Daniel, his purpose was first and foremost speaking to his people. He was dealing with their discipline. He was instructing them. He was encouraging them, and he was protecting them. He was making provision for their future. That was the focus. The rest of the world, indeed, is also addressed, but the focus was Christ, was God's people. And while the world was going to learn about the humbling of Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar himself was going to acknowledge that it is the Most High God who rules in the kingdoms of men and sets over them whomever he decides to set over them, the Lord's message was still firstly aimed at his own people. He was speaking to Israel. And based upon this assumption, you don't have to agree with me, based upon this assumption, I suggest to you that the Lord was giving even more encouragement to his people who were yet to be brought to Babylon. And he was also revealing just how hard the hearts were of those who continued to reject the Lord's message. So he's giving even more information to those yet to come. The final destruction of Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar, when that ended the nation of Judah for the 70 years, but when they completely were removed, was in the 19th year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. Okay, we're talking here in the much earlier than that. I'm thinking this message was long before the final destruction of Jerusalem. I will deal with some of the reasons why I suggest this took place before Jerusalem was finally defeated, though I believe a case can even be made that it might have been even earlier than that. Possibly before even Jehoiakim and Ezekiel were taken into captivity in 597. And before you object, I haven't forgotten about the seven times. We'll deal with that in its place. This chapter is Nebuchadnezzar's own account of what happened to him. He's writing after the fact, telling us what happened. And either he wrote it himself, or he dictated it to somebody else and had somebody else record it. Daniel might even have written it as dictated from Nebuchadnezzar, but the king is telling what happened. And so he says, Nebuchadnezzar the king, to all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. This is far-reaching. I thought it good to declare the signs and wonders that the Most High God has worked for me. How great are his signs, and how mighty his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. What an amazing announcement that was sent throughout the known world to all peoples, languages, We'll not spend much time on these words now because they're repeated at the end. That this whole chapter begins and ends with very similar words, and so we're going to focus on that next time when we close the chapter on the weight and the impact of these things that Nebuchadnezzar is declaring to the whole world. The Lord's goal from the beginning was to draw all peoples to Himself, all nations and kindreds and peoples. And here He is using this pagan king to proclaim this message, the message that Israel should have been proclaiming, the message and the testimony that Israel should have been manifesting to the world so that they said, "My, what a God you serve." We've got the pagan king doing that. While the people in Jerusalem are playing with idols. And so in verse 4, Nebuchadnezzar says, "I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in my house and flourishing in my palace." This could have been said at any stage of Nebuchadnezzar's life. This incredible city with those incredible walls and defenses and the richness and the opulence and the grandeur of that place. Anybody resting in that palace would have felt like that. Flourishing in my palace. And so, once again, this could fit into any period of his life. It doesn't force us to move the story to the end of his life. And then he tells us that he had this dream. A dream that made this king afraid. It troubled him. And so he issues a decree to his empire and brings all the wise people, all the soothsayers and the wizards and everybody that could look into these things. He brings them all. He says, "Well, you all got to come and interpret this dream." And when they present it before him, unlike the other time, he tells them the dream. He explains, "This is what I dreamt." But they couldn't interpret it. They didn't know what it meant. And finally, Daniel comes. I'm not sure why he was delayed. He was the last one to arrive. Providentially, I know there was providence. God allowed the fools to demonstrate their foolishness and their ignorance. But I don't know why, where he was in the empire, that he came last. But he finally arrived. And once again, the Lord in His providence reveals the bankruptcy of the false gods, the false claims, the false claims to wisdom. And we see the foolishness of man. And Nebuchadnezzar says, "But at last Daniel came before me. His name is Belshazzar, according to the name of my God. In him is the spirit of the holy God. And I told him the dream before him, saying, 'Belshazzar, chief of the magicians, because I know that the spirit of the holy God is in you and no secret troubles you, explain to me the visions of my dream that I have seen and its interpretation.'" And then the king proceeds to tell Daniel what he dreamt. And he says, "I was looking and there was this great tree. And behold, in the middle of the earth, this tree whose height was incredible, it was of great height. And this tree grew and became incredibly strong. And it reached into the heavens. And it could be seen to the ends of the earth. People could behold this tree. It had luscious leaves. And in it was food for all. And the beasts of the field found shade under its canopy. And the birds of heaven dwelt in its branches, and all flesh fed from it." And the king says, "And I saw in the vision in my head while on my bed, and there was a watcher, a holy one, coming down from heaven. And he cried aloud, saying thus, 'Chop down the tree and cut off its branches, strip off its leaves and scatter its fruit. Let the beasts get out from under it and the birds from its branches. Nevertheless, leave a stump and roots in the earth. And bind them with a band of iron and bronze. and in the tender grass of the field, let it be wet with the dew of heaven. And let him graze with the beasts on the grass of the earth. Let his heart be changed from that of a man. Let him be given the heart of a beast. And let seven times pass over him. This decision is by the decree of the watchers, and the sentence by the word of the holy ones, in order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, and gives it to whomever he wills, and sets over it the lowest of men. This dream I, Nebuchadnezzar, have seen. Now you, Belshazzar, declare its interpretation, since all the wise men of my kingdom are not able to make known to me the interpretation. But you are able, for the Spirit of the Holy God is in you. Then Daniel, whose name was Belshazzar, was astonished. And his thoughts troubled him as the realization and the understanding of what this dream meant came upon him. And so the king says to him, Belshazzar, do not let this dream or its interpretation trouble you. And so he responded, my lord, the dream, may the dream concern your enemies. I wish this was not about you. So he's preparing the king. This is not good news. I believe Nebuchadnezzar suspected that. He says, this is not good news. I wish it was about your enemies. Daniel says, the tree that you saw that grew so strong and its height reached into the heavens, and all the beasts of the field gathered under it, that is you, O king. You have grown and become strong. It manifests you. It's a picture of your incredible kingdom, your greatness, and your dominion to the end of the earth. He says, but inasmuch as you saw the watcher, the Holy One coming down from heaven and saying, chop down the tree and destroy it, but leave its stump and roots in the earth and bind the stump with a band of iron and bronze in the tender grass of the field, and let it be wet with the dew of heaven, and let him graze while the beasts of the field with the beasts of the field till seven times pass over him. Let me tell you the interpretation of that, O king. He says, they shall drive you from men. And your dwelling will be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make you eat grass like oxen. They shall wet you with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over you till you know that the Most High God rules in the kingdom of men, and that he gives it to whoever he chooses. And inasmuch as they gave the command to leave the stump and the root, your kingdom shall be assured to you after you come to know that heaven rules. When you come to that realization, when you come to that point where your heart bows to the reality that heaven rules in the affairs of this pagan kingdom, in every area of the earth, when you realize that, you will be restored. Therefore, O king, let me advise you, Daniel says, and may my advice be acceptable to you. Break off your sins by being righteous, and your iniquity by showing mercy to the poor. Perhaps there may be a lengthening of your prosperity. Change your ways, truly embrace the God of heaven, and let this be manifested by your works and your actions, of one of them being merciful to the poor. Verse 29 says, all these things came upon Nebuchadnezzar. He obviously didn't accept Daniel's advice. In verse 29, we are told, at the end of the 12 months, he was walking about the royal palace of Babylon. And the king spoke, saying, is not this great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling, in my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty? All the commentators that I consulted say that this is referring to 1 year after Daniel had interpreted the dream, after 12 months. Nebuchadnezzar had plenty of time to heed the prophet's warning, but he held on to his pride, and so now he was out walking upon his royal palace, upon. Some translations have around, walking about. He was walking upon it. He was walking upon the roof of his palace. This wasn't just any kind of roof. Because on top of his palace, he had constructed one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. That was the legendary Hanging Gardens of Babylon. The amazing spectacle contained an incredible amount of earth with massive trees and incredible shrubbery growing on the top of his palace. This is an amazing spectacle. This lush vegetation on varying levels, it was towering above the palace and also higher than these soaring walls that surrounded this incredibly impregnable city. As the Persian approached the Ister Gate into the city, they would have been awed by their majesty and their height. I mean, if you're talking in proportion, you would have people entering in, and this gateway and the walls are just incredibly high, and they were all enameled. Blue enamel. Vast amount. And on these were reliefs that popped out of the walls of lions and dragons and bulls. And they were tiled with white and yellow and red. It's majestic, incredible. And yet as you're just catching your breath from walking up this end towards this entrance, surrounded by massive walls on either side, but also in front of you as you're going out to enter into the city, towering above these incredible walls would have been this hanging garden. Looks like it's hanging in the air. Massive trees growing. The design and architecture was stunning. We don't appreciate that in our evolutionary world mindset. But it was an incredible structure. And so as you walk through the gate, behind them would have been this mountain. Hills, looks like. Beautiful gardens hanging in the air. And as Nebuchadnezzar walked in the midst of these above his palace, every way he looked, he would have witnessed the amazing beauty and strength of his city. And his heart was filled with pride. Oh, I am the ultimate. I mean, I had prophets telling me that as well. The head of gold. This massive tree. And I have built this for my glory and accomplished much. And he was very impressed with himself. He would build more, but he had built a lot already. He was an amazing designer and architect. Charles Boutflower, in his book In and Around the Book of Daniel, says that one of Daniel's early building projects was the rebuilding of his father's old palace. And in talking about when Nebuchadnezzar built the Hanging Gardens, Boutflower says, "These appear to have been constructed in a work which was executed fairly early in his reign, namely the rebuilding of the old palace of Babylon, and were designed, moreover, according to Berossus, who's an ancient historian, to gratify the taste of a Median wife, presumably that Median princess, with whom, for political purposes, he was contracted in marriage even before his father's death." The Jewish historian Josephus, also quoting Berossus, the ancient historian, says, "Now in this palace, having built up lofty structures of stone and planted them with all kinds of trees, giving an appearance very closely resembling mountains, he wrought out and prepared the famous Hanging Gardens to gratify his wife, who was from a mountainous country, having been brought up in Media." So we have this incredible structure built early. I'm arguing for early in his reign. And there he is walking on those gardens on that fateful night where he's beholding the glory of his kingdom. And it's from this vantage point of the hanging gardens that Nebuchadnezzar's pride was struck down by the Lord. And as he just finished speaking, the text tells us, while the word was still in the king's mouth, a voice fell from heaven. King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken. The kingdom has departed from you. And they shall drive you from men, and your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make you eat grass like oxen, and seven times shall pass over you until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. That very hour, the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men and ate grass like an oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven till his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. E.J. Young says that they will drive you. It can also be translated as you shall be driven. It's kind of a neutral thing. It doesn't have to be translated like that. And I think that's what happened. When he had spoken that word, he lost his mind and he started to act and he drove himself. He went. He was driven, obviously, by his madness, but into the wilderness. And I have no explanation where that was or how he did it or how the people reacted to that. But the Lord said it's going to be for seven times. For seven times pass over you. So we probably should spend some time looking at that word. The IVP background commentary says that this word refers to specific periods, but there is nothing in the word that identifies any particular length of time. Likewise, Albert Barnes in his commentary says that there is nothing in the word that identifies any particular length of time. The word has to do with any stated or designated period, a time. Whose time? What time? Length of time? Nothing is specified there. Other commentators claim that it would be impossible to determine what seven times specifically referred to, as far as how do we measure that? How would it be measured? Nevertheless, many still assume that it talked about 7 years of time. But once again, there's no way to insist upon this. There's nothing to back that up and say, well, this is the only way to understand it. And I suggest that the volatility of such kingdoms and struggles for power, 7 years of absence, I find it very difficult to believe that he stepped out for 7 years. The number seven in the Bible is a number used for completeness, and thus the seven times could refer to God's perfect amount of time for humbling the proud king and bringing him to a place where he would acknowledge the reality of God's dominion, namely that it is the Lord who rules in the affairs of men and gives kingdoms to whomever he pleases. That's the goal. That's the objective. You're going to acknowledge this. This is the message that's going to be proclaimed to the world. And I'm going to take the fullness of time needed to bring you to that position. And so I suggest to you that this period could be fitted into the time we have between his stalemate battle with Egypt and him re-engaging in Egypt. The times could conceivably be anything between 5 and 7 months. If you want to take time as a month, then take 7 months. And I only suggest that because of the end of this section that we're looking at, and that there had to be enough time for his fingernails to grow like bird's claws and his hair to become like feathers. We needed that kind of time. And your fingernails can grow about an inch in 7 months. And that would be big enough for a bird's claw. And if you're living in the wilderness, you don't need to be living like an animal for many months before your hair is matted and twisted together. It looks like feathers, more like feathers than like hair. So Here's my suggestion for the possibility of this fitting in before 597. You don't have to agree with me. It's just I'm throwing it out for your own consideration. But it's based on the assumption that God is speaking very loudly to His people. And He's adding this to the whole collection of what He has already been saying from Babylon and in Judah. And now you have an incredible event. And so in 597 BC, I believe this happened before that, when Jehoiakim, who followed his father Jehoiakim, when Jehoiakim and Ezekiel and piles of other people were taken into captivity, this had already transpired before that. If you're going to really stamp and sharp, then okay, I'll say, well, maybe it was after 597, but certainly before 587, when Jerusalem was completely destroyed. So here's the dating I'll suggest to you. 601 BC, remember, Nebuchadnezzar fought a stalemate battle with Egypt. He then returned home, probably around September. But he doesn't return to Egypt again until the summer of 599. There's this huge break. We have enough time for this to fit in here. It's possible that in the October of 601 BC, Nebuchadnezzar had the dream, which Daniel interpreted. He returned back from that stalemate battle. So if the text is saying that 12 months later he was walking upon his palace after that dream, then that would put us around September of 600 BC, at the time the king became mad. September of 600 BC, by our reckoning. 6 months from there would take us to the end of the year, the ancient calendar year. So theoretically, the king could have had his mind back by the spring of 599, sent out his decree worldwide announcing the glory of the only true God, and then headed off to finish the war with Egypt before proceeding to discipline Judah. So the decree could have been in Judah before he even set out again to defeat Egypt. And defeated Egypt and then moved on to Judah. And as he's approaching the city, who is he? He is the God proclaiming. He's the king proclaiming the only true God. The very city that proclaimed to be the throne room and the center of the only true God. This king is coming and acknowledging the reality, the truthfulness, and the absolute submission to that God. It's an incredible picture. If we didn't know it to be true, it would sound like fiction. Just kept the message blaring at Judah. What are you doing? The pagan king that the Lord was telling them to bow to was proclaiming the truth to the nations. Their God, he was exalting to the nations. And God is telling them, bow to this man. And this man is saying, Jehovah is the only true God. He was doing what Israel was responsible to be doing, proclaiming the true God to the nations. Do you know what is happening here? The king of Babylon was coming to Judah to rescue the Jews from their pagan king and bring them into a kingdom that officially acknowledged the only true God as their Lord. I'm saying all the people were saved. But that is the condition that is now being presented to the Jews. This is what you're going to do. This is where you're coming. This is what I want you to bow to. And you still got people saying, cannot do that. And many hearts continued in stubborn rebellion. Incredible manifestation of God's power, the scope of His vision, incredible mercy that He extends to His people. The kindness. He goes way and beyond, over and above what they deserve. No, they just needed to get into Babylon and submit, didn't they? He doesn't do that. makes an incredible preparation. He kind of builds a palace there for them in the conditions with respect to the mindset towards their religion, towards their God, towards their purposes. And he gives them amazing signs and wonders. When they open that letter, the decree sent to all the world, and they start to read that in the king's palace in Jerusalem. And yet Jehoiakim and Jehoiakim, before he died, continued to do evil and rebel. See, it's not an information thing, is it? Our hearts are in rebellion against the truth. So refusing to bow to him who is the Lord of Lords and the King of Kings. This is not a book of fiction. This is an incredible story that reads like fiction. And it's gripping. Amazing. What is going on? May the Lord give us hearts to embrace it and bow to it. All that he has said. Beholding the beauty and the grandeur and the amazing love that he manifests to his people. And he humbles kings in this way. The next time, as we look at how the Nebuchadnezzar ends off his letter, we will be stunned even further. So let's bow our hearts. Our Lord and our God, we are greatly humbled by just reading the story, because we know that so often our perception of who you are is so very, very small. Our expectations of what it means to live in your kingdom and to see your hand working are so very, very small. Forgive us for this, Lord. I do pray that you would give us a vision of you and your kingdom that is worthy of you. Give us hearts to believe your word and to believe what you have said you are doing and continue to do. Lord, we thank you for this glorious story, for this manifestation of your amazing power. And I pray that we would stand and see such amazing things as we proclaim your truth without doubt, without apology, but full of faith and courage. So we ask these things in the name of Christ, who is the Lord of Lords and King of Kings. Amen.